All right.
Here we are.
We're good. Hello, everybody. We are back. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends, right?
Come inside, come inside.
That's right. That's way before Soul's time. She doesn't even remember.
No, I don't.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show. Sorry.
We're still Lincoln Palmer.
It's a good song.
We've been using it for a long time. Anyway, welcome back, everybody. It has been a couple of weeks since we've been on air, and it's so much fun to be back. I can't even tell you. We're so excited about our new little venture here, One Lucky Dog. No, it's a little bright in the background, but that's because Scott had to get his name up there, and he made a big deal about the brightness.
Right. So, it always comes back to
he
me.
He threw a fit when I didn't put his name up there originally, so, you know, we had to fix it. But anyway, I'm Tom Sosnoff, Scott Sheridan, Sol Espinoza.
Suarez.
Showing some skin already.
Showing some skin, yeah.
This is going to be a good show.
Usually I take my shirt off at some point, but I think I'm going to leave it on right now. Anyway, we are so excited to be back on air, back with you guys on a brand new set. We are on the north side of Chicago. If you're curious, we built out this amazing set in the funkiest place you can imagine. Hopefully you can get a real good grasp of the size of everything that's here. And I am officially beret-less for the first time in 25 years.
That actually could go a lot of ways, none of them good.
There you go. I don't really care.
All right. It has been 20. That's crazy.
In 25 years. I was funny. I did my last live event on Friday in Austin, Texas. And by the way, anybody that came out to that incredible live event with myself, The Bat, Liz and Jenny. It was kind of my last tasty event. And in Austin, it was amazing. And thank you all so much for coming out. An incredible day. So many amazing memories. But now it's time to turn the page.
Are you going to give any information about the Terry Black, that experience? Because that's, I know, so, food is always, I'm sure if anybody's watching right now, they understand how important food is to us, to this show. I actually am a bit jealous because I've never been to Terry Black's, and hearing about it, it's like, I got to go to Austin. I have a niece in Austin, so I have a reason to go.
There's a couple of life-changing like barbecue places around the country.
This is one of them.
Life-changing. Yeah. I mean, for foodies.
Yes.
So,
no, I get it.
So we did the show in the morning, right? And like started like, let's say, we'd be there at like 6 or 7 in the morning, and then we finished around 11 or 12, so then I had another show in the afternoon at the University of Texas for a whole other slew of people.
You give them Hook'em Horns?
Hook'em Horns did the whole thing, yeah, of course. And in between, we had time to go to Terry Black's. Because every time I go to Austin, it's kind of like, it's part of the whole experience. And Terry Black's is the most chaotic restaurant I've ever been to. You've been to Buc-ee's before, right?
No.
You've ever been to Buc-ee's?
No.
Where is it?
Buc-ee's is a gas station, you know, but it's chaotic.
Buc-ee's just a gas station?
It's why a would it giant get?
We're
gas
in
station.
Austin?
But what? In Austin?
Where is this?
No, Buc-ee's
gas
are all over the country. They're
seen one. They're all over the country. Give me a place that has a Buc-ee's. I've never seen one.
Like probably in, I mean, the one I went to was in
like
Tennessee.
Like Speedway? Okay,
it was
Tennessee.
In Tennessee. But they're these giant guests. Anyway, they're chaotic.
They sell more than gas.
They sell brisket.
Brisket.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's good?
It's okay. It's not Terry Black's. But anyway, my point is it's chaotic.
Nothing is Terry Black's. We got that.
Okay. So the chaos there, which is you get online, they push you through, you have your tray, they say, what sides do you want? They don't give you like a lot of time. They give you like 12 seconds, and they slap it in the cart, depending on what size you want, and just move.
See, I like that. I appreciate that, though, because I cannot stand people. They wait, they get there, and then they look, and they go, what do I want?
Okay.
And you're like, you've been in line for however long, and now you're looking to see what you're going to get?
And the whole thing is, if you can't make a decision, they throw you out. they're literally like, people just move around this person. Because they have no tolerance for people who can't
machine.
Make decisions. They're a machine.
Stand people,
well-oiled
they
machine.
Wait, they get there, and then they look, and they go.
And so what happens is, after you get your sides, then they push you over to where the meat slicers are. And there's probably, let's say, 10 different people slicing meat. When you get there, you know, now that you've already, the expectation is that you've already made a decision on what you want. And so I already knew what I want. I wanted brisket. I wanted beef ribs.
Do they do pastrami?
They do not. They do
they're Texan,
turkey.
Not Jewish.
No. It's the only thing I would never order.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Yeah. And they do sausage, jalapeno cheddar sausage.
Salad.
Everything's great. There was a bunch of us. We ordered.
Is this the Fred Flintstone beef
rib? Yeah, they have those. We got those too.
Okay.
Those we share because they're just too big. Everything else, like the brisket, whatever else. And they push you through the line and they give you whatever you know, and they do it the whole thing fast. It's lightning fast. And there's hundreds of people there and there's a line out the door and you're fighting for tables. You're looking for barbecue sauce. There's napkins. They give you rolls of paper towels and you just sit down. And
you eat until you're sick, and then you get up and leave.
You eat until you're sick, then you get up and leave. Then you have to help.
Did you overeat?
Did I? Yeah.
Is this like 10 o'clock? What time is it open? Like 10, 10:30?
I don't know what time it opens.
What does it go till they sell out?
Yeah, probably. I read some insane statistic.
About how much meat they sell?
Yeah, insane. But these are just like, this is just one of, there's probably 10 really good barbecue joints in Austin.
How many Terry Black's locations are there?
I think there's four. I think there's one in Dallas.
Oh, not all in Austin.
No, I think there's one outside of Austin, the original one. And then there's Austin, I think, is the second one. There's one in Dallas. There's one, like a fourth one somewhere else. But when I go to Dallas, I like Pecan Lodge.
Pecan, like the nut?
Yeah.
I don't like pecans.
Well, they don't have pecans there, but it's called Pecan Lodge. And we go there every time. It's amazing.
But they don't
is it
have
barbecue?
Pecans?
Well, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Okay, but they must have pecan pie.
I doubt it.
Well, they must have.
No, there's a pie store right next door.
That they sell pecan pie?
I don't know. They sell
so
pie.
So what's the with the name?
Right.
Why is it
I don't know. What the, it's I think they use I think that's the wood they use.
Oh.
Maybe. But what's cool about these places is they have like, you remember that Little Miss Barbecue place they have in
Great.
Great, right?
Great.
They got one smoker outside, if you remember.
Yeah, it's great.
These places have 20.
Okay.
It's insane.
When you talk about the jalapeno sausage, the cheddar jalapeno cheddar, that was the first time I had it.
It's great.
It's great.
Do you think maybe they ship?
What do you mean, do I think they ship? They ship. I've ordered it from there before.
Terry Black's ships?
Of course they ship.
Well,
every place ships. They're like Katz's.
Yeah, but it's not the same. It's not. It's like, I don't know where it comes from. Like, when you get Katz's, it works, but it's not remotely close to the same.
The best shipped brisket is Katz's. Because when you ship
pastrami or brisket?
Pastrami. When you cook it for 3 hours.
Yeah.
It tastes very good.
It is very good, but it's not as good as if you're eating there.
No.
Oh, and by the way, because you weren't around like a couple of years ago, I order the party pack for Tom and Beth and Tony, have the party pack delivered. Okay, COVID. That was a really nice thing to do.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, until this one. Doesn't give me a like, wow, Scott, really thoughtful. Thanks for the party pack from Katz's. You forgot the mustard.
and the Thousand Island.
Of course he does.
You forgot the mustard. So the now I know. Island. Now I know. Never going to forget the mustard. So if you ever go to Kansas, make sure you get plenty of mustard.
Anyway, if you are new, and I don't think a lot of you are new because we haven't, there's a couple things we haven't done yet. First, we didn't send out an email telling everybody that we're going live today. And the reason for that is because we think there's going to be a few bugs, a couple glitches, things like that. And, you know, we want to work those out. We're also going to do the show 3 days a week for starters. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. No new show on Thursday and Friday, but everything's going to loop, so you'll be able to watch it anytime. You don't have to watch these shows live. If you want to call in, you have to watch them live, obviously.
888-645-3839. Number's down there. Phone lines should be open all the time.
Yeah, this is not a show where we have separate call-ins. Our phone lines are always open, and if we want to go to you, we will. Sometimes that means you're going to have to wait on hold a little bit or a lot of bit.
The nice thing is, I think, Jeff, you get to talk to Jeff, right? So
somebody actually want to talk to Jeff?
Jeff, I'd be happy to talk to you.
Okay. But anyway, the show will be, for the next couple of weeks, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday will be live shows. Each show will be somewhere between an hour and 15 minutes and an hour and a half. The content's going to be all over the place. There'll be a little market talk. There'll be a little political talk. There'll be a lot of our own experiences. Scott and I have been working together for 35-ish years, over 35 years. Sol, Scott and I have known each other for 30 years. It's amazing because
That's pretty good. You're 22. We've known you for 30 years.
You're 42 and you've
like
for 30 years. You were 12.
I was 12.
When she first started working for us, she was 12. I don't think you can pull that off anymore. But no, actually, we go back to all the way back to the trading floor together.
Right.
And then we go back to thinkorswim together.
So a question on the female side, forget you, because I'm not talking to you about advice about women. So we had this running joke in my family that you couldn't talk about an ex, but you could talk about an XX.
So what's an XX?
Two removed. So long as there was another, you didn't talk about the last one, but you could talk about all the, not the body counts, but just all the ones before that. Is that a woman thing?
I think that's legit, yeah.
Right? Yeah, well, go ahead. Let's hear you about dating. Here you go. What are you talking about?
I wasn't going to say anything. I just didn't know what an XX was.
Well, so I was going to say, like, we could talk about thinkorswim because that's an XX.
Right.
Oh, we can talk about anything.
I'm kidding.
We've reached the point in our life where we can talk about anything. I'm just setting the stage.
But that's an XX. So Soul goes back to us to an XX.
To an XX.
Actually, an XXX.
I'm just saying that Soul's not somebody that we have a history.
We didn't just pick her up on the street in the corner.
That's right.
Yes, and we're happy to be reunited again after many years. And it felt like we didn't actually miss a beat, to tell you the truth.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's one of those friendships.
Yeah. So so it's awesome to be back, and we are really excited about what we are building here on the live show, which is called One Lucky Dog, and on our software, which is called Lost Dog. In fact, you will have a sneak peek today at our first sneak peek of the software as we get to the end of our first day show. But our software, we probably won't launch it until the end of November at the earliest. It's pretty much done. It's kind of in beta right now. We're working through some of the bugs. We built an amazing software platform. It's a little different than you thought, because everything Scott and I have built over the last 35 years has always been trading related. And this show is not about trading. It is about entrepreneurship, business, markets. It is about making yourself more valuable. It is about your personality. There's a lot. And we're gonna play this very quantitatively, so it's gonna be an incredible amount of fun. And we're also gonna include you. So can't wait to have you interact with us on the show, interact with us via email, whatever else it is. You know how crazy we are about all that kind of stuff. And
we got Jeff, he is looking at the YouTube chat, so if there's something that happens to come in, happy to respond at some point.
And I have a local number that you can also call.
What is it?
And that's 312-448. Okay. 7032.
448-7032.
Yep.
Okay.
Well,
so it's funny because, like, we're dating ourselves to say a toll-free number versus a local number, because with these, like, it doesn't matter.
Do you use a toll-free number anymore ever? I don't.
Well, I'll use a toll-free number if that's the number they give me. I don't look for a toll-free number.
Right.
But I mean, if somebody says, here's the number to call and it's 888, you go, okay, great. I don't care.
Right.
But it's so funny. It's like, I remember 100 years ago, getting customers to be calling and say, hi, this is Bob, I'm calling long distance. I'm like, okay, you were at least 70 years old. Like, if you say you're calling long distance.
Now anybody that calls from overseas, they're either using WhatsApp, which I don't mind, but my icon's on a different page on my phone. So,
and you don't see the messages?
I don't see the messages.
I have the same problem, and I thought I turned on because I went and I'm like, oh my God, I had a bunch of messages and I went and responded. I said, I'm really sorry. But yeah, same thing. It should just pop up.
I will help you after the show.
Thank you.
I can use all the help. I'm a boomer. Yeah. I can use all the help I can get with the WhatsApp stuff. And also, the other
WhatsApp's great.
Yes, it is.
The other thing is that a lot of people will use FaceTime audio.
Yeah, FaceTime audio. Or FaceTime if you're on Wi-Fi.
It tends to work a lot better than long distance calls.
Yeah, it does.
Does it? Yeah. Who owns it? Meta owns WhatsApp?
Yes.
Meta.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother topic. Meta.
We're not going to talk about that.
Meta will be one of our rant topics coming up.
And
we have some fun stuff. Anyway, let's talk about what we're going to, let you talk about what we're going to talk about today on the show.
All right.
Enough
about all of us.
I mean, we've got a lot of
stuff. Let's move on with this.
We've got a lot of food topics to discuss. We've got a lot of life topics to discuss. But again, we are broadcasting from our brand new studios on a huge stage. We custom made all this stuff so that you could have something fun to look at and to wonder where the hell are we. We got some big wide shots. We've been building this this, we've been building this place out actually for a couple of years, and we're so excited to share this amazing studio with you. We're on the north side of Chicago, just west of Wrigley Field, and can't wait to do this for into perpetuity.
Let's do this. All right, on today's show, we have a segment that we love to call News You Can't Use.
See, I hate news, so News You Can't Use is
a lot more fun.
It's a lot more fun. Yeah. News, to me, news drives me freaking crazy.
All news?
All news.
Any news.
Any news.
But you still read them.
That's actually incorrect.
I will read headlines and read news, but I can't.
But you don't want to know what's going on?
No, I don't want when
other
people.
But you do know what's going on, read them. So I think you're lying.
I'm not saying an opinion piece. News. So anyway. You look at sports, that's news. You look at sports.
I look at scores.
Scores.
Yeah.
That's news.
I don't like it when people repeat the news. It's like, okay, I've heard enough.
Okay, I understand.
Go ahead. What else?
Don't repeat yourself.
Don't.
Plus, for me, always talking about markets, news was always irrelevant to me.
That's a different topic.
We are going to go deep into fiscal responsibility. And Tom has a bone to pick. And that will be a really good segment that you don't want to miss. Scott and Tom discuss.
Tom has a lot of bones to
pick. So
we will
have
bones to pick.
Into perpetuity. Scott and Tom discuss self-differentiation. And we close with Tom and Scott's take on today's financial markets.
Yeah.
So let's do this.
You know, what's funny is that we're going to do a lot of talking about, you know, different ways to improve your value, your self-worth, and your marketplace value. And we're also going to do a lot on social things. And we're always going to close with a little market talk. So, yeah, we're going to force you to wait till the end to hear our market opinions. So I think you're going to love this. It's going to be a little different, and let us work through the kinks over the next couple of weeks, but I think you're going to love this.
All right, so we're going to have the headlines of News You Can't Use, but we're also going to be playing a little game we like to call Real or Onion, where I'm going to read the headline.
Real
to you,
or Onion?
Or Onion.
Like in the Onion?
Like as in the newspaper,
the
Onion.
Yeah.
And you're going to guess whether it's Onion or it's real.
Do you know, quick little story.
Yes.
We looked at buying the Onion. Christy and I, a couple years ago, looked at...
More than a couple years ago. It's probably 10 years
ago. Probably 10 years ago.
The COVID does that, but yes.
Yes, it does.
No, this is way before COVID.
Yeah, probably
this
10 years ago.
Whoever owned the Onion, and they own like maybe 15 other publications, like Gizmodo and websites.
Yeah.
Like Gizmodo and a bunch of other ones. They put it all on the market, like all of them up for sale because they weren't doing very well. And we looked at it, but we just couldn't figure out how to monetize it.
Right.
A little bit of a distraction.
Probably would have been a good purchase.
I would have loved to have bought it.
Right.
Anyway, love
you. Maybe
the
you can still do it.
You know where the Onion originally
started? So we're going
to
move on.
Milwaukee or somewhere.
I thought it was Madison, Wisconsin.
Madison, somewhere in Wisconsin.
First, Real or Onion?
Yep.
Real or Onion?
Cameroon just elected a 92-year-old who has never lost an election as the world's eldest leader, head of state.
It's crazy enough at 92, I am saying that's real.
Okay, do you know where Cameroon is?
West Africa.
That's pretty good.
Did you know? No.
Of course I knew.
Of course I knew. Next to Djibouti. Go ahead.
Okay,
of course
sure.
I knew. I mean, West Africa is practically, you know.
Hey, like, should we tell
my
you about
second
our,
home.
Should we tell you about our gold mine in Mali? You know what that would be worth today?
More than what we sold it for.
I think we needed gold at like 275 or 300 an ounce.
275 was the break even.
I think 275.
I remember the talks.
The gold
because
mine.
This is back when.
Long
the
time.
Trading floor days.
Yeah.
But I thought for some reason it was diamonds.
No, it's gold.
No, gold.
Okay.
Do you still have the canister?
Maybe. I don't know. But we needed over 300 an ounce.
Over 300 hours.
But
I think gold's over 300.
The whole Mali thing, Timbuktu. So I think Cameroon's just
around there.
Yeah, around there, just off to the right a little bit. Cameroon elected a 92-year-old. Yeah, I'm going to say that's true because that would be, you know, why not?
Right.
Is it true?
It is real.
Yeah.
So that's true. I'm trying to move the clicker, but it's not working for me.
Don't get you.
Okay, we'll move it ahead, guys.
Anyway, we're moving on. Okay. Next one. Prince Andrew is stripped of royal computer privileges. Is that real or onion? What do you think?
I am saying that King Charles has no idea what a computer is, and he's going to say, sure, take it away, because he, sure, I'm going to say that's real.
I'm going to say Prince Andrew stripped of royal Does anybody really care what Prince Andrew, like, I mean, is there a bigger douchebag in the whole world than Prince Andrew?
Well, the couple, but.
There's a couple, right. But
there
I
are
mean,
a couple.
In England,
the six just
in the UK.
The six just finished reading the book, the woman, the one that she killed herself, the one that
Yes.
Yeah, she's so crazy, like crazy, crazy sad story. He's so guilty.
Oh.
So guilty, allegedly.
Okay,
allegedly.
Wait, whoa. Hey, what are you doing?
It's not.
I'm going to say it's real.
It's not moving, but I have it, and it's onion.
See? And it's
really?
I don't know. The deck is going a little crazy on me.
All right.
But that was onion. Just because probably that minor detail of the computer privileges, but I think everything else he's been.
All right.
He's been stripped.
Yeah.
Stripped.
I like his new name, Mountbatten or whatever.
Mountbatten Windsor.
Something.
Yes.
All right. Keep going.
Oh, you know. All right. So, okay. Let's not look at the deck. It's not working for us.
Got a few problems.
The next one is a zoo, and this is a good one. A zoo in Denmark asked patrons to donate their pets, not as attractions, but for food. Do we think that's real or onion?
This one I'm going to say is so crazy, but no. You can't ask people to give their pets as food. No, this can't be real.
Tom?
I think that I've heard this before, and I think that this is not the first time that a zoo, I don't think this is like saying drop your dog off at daycare.
So you know,
I don't think this is dropping your dog off at daycare and then drop your cat off because you're going on vacation. I think this is like if you have an extra guinea pig in the house or like a...
What's an extra guinea pig?
I don't know.
I mean, obviously they think if this is real, they're clearly going out with a campaign saying,
well, when my kids were little, they had
the worst.
Had a guinea pig.
We did too, the worst.
And that guinea pig is
we did too.
The worst.
Reason to eat them.
And I would have given that guinea pig to the zoo for sure.
I can't
sure.
wait to talk to the people that want to call about guinea pigs being eaten.
No. I would have given that guinea pig to the
zoo. All right,
zoo.
So real or onion? What are you saying?
This is real.
Okay.
This is real.
It is real.
It is real. There you go.
It is real. That's because, let me tell you, okay. Forget the deck. Let me tell you, it's real because they asked for guinea pigs, chickens, rabbits, and...
But you've had guinea pig.
I've had guinea pig.
And what does it taste like?
Like pork. It's delicious. And
guinea pig, the other white meat.
Wait, and they're asking for horses.
That's a lot of food. Who has a horse that they're just going to give?
Well, no, but you know, horses are delicate. So at any moment, they break their leg.
You have
to put it down.
I had horse once, but not.
You have to euthanize it.
Right. What else you got?
I didn't know it was eating
horse. Anyway, so it's real.
Okay.
And
okay.
There was a whole controversy, but they're saying, you know, it's important for the animals to have real.
What's next?
No, up next, I don't know if the deck is working on its own, but up next is a University of Michigan household study finds standards lower for second search through fridge.
1,000%
real
true.
Onion.
This is 1,000% true because I can tell you personally, my standards go way down the second time through because I'm like, there's got to be something in here I can eat.
First of all, what they should have done is the University of Michigan should have done a study to show that like between 3 and 10 times through the fridge. I'm easily a 3 to 10 time look through the fridge
before you find something.
No, before I accept the fact that nothing's changed. Like, you know, like, I think what you're expecting to see, I mean, over the years.
More than twice?
Oh, me?
Yes.
Oh, God, yes. Sometimes I'm probably 10 times I've opened the same.
And then it's amazing about, like, the third or fourth time you go, well, it actually doesn't look bad. I can actually eat that. Where the first three times you're like, I'm never eating
baby carrots?
Baby carrots, exactly.
So long as
alone, without hummus or anything.
So long as there's peanut butter or hummus.
You know, like, things that you would just... So
I actually had hot honey hummus the other day. It was really good.
Oh, that's
this
sounds
is
good.
Really good.
This is 100% onion.
This is real. This is 100%
true. This is onion.
Onion?
Okay, it's onion.
Okay.
I don't know what's happening with the deck.
Yeah, we'll fix it. It's all first right. day. All right, what's next?
Now we're moving on to headlines.
Okay.
The World Series is over. To what extent do we need robot umpires?
100%.
100%.
1,000%.
1,000,000%.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
I think so too. I agree.
The world of manual, like I mean, of blind old men calling balls and strikes.
Horrible.
And with an attitude.
Yeah, and it's terrible when an official in any sport changes the you know. The direction of a game. The Cubs game, I don't remember, one of the playoff games against Milwaukee. Literally.
Milwaukee got robbed.
Milwaukee did?
Yeah, when they pitched the.
Oh, no, the Cubs, it was like this far below, and he called it a strike.
Yeah.
And the announcer's like, I'm not even sure what to say to that.
Right.
Like, you can't even defend it. It's going to be awesome. But you being a big tennis fan, and it's been in tennis for a long time, and I think purists, when he came into tennis, are like, oh my God, you can't do this.
Yes.
You need line judges. Now I think everybody loves
it. The French Open.
To me, there's no worse fan than baseball.
There's
people that know, like purists, like the statistics.
Well, baseball's the only sport that uses the term purist. But, you know, like.
Horrible. They're horrible.
Yeah. Baseball is behind. But baseball's
going to be great.
The reason the World Series this year was like the most popular World Series.
Because they were great games.
Well, besides the fact they were great games.
Right.
Is because the speed of the game is faster and because there's not as much like subjectivity to certain calls. Just balls and strikes is the only thing left to deal with. You saw how many times they challenge things.
I will say the pitch clock is great. It is so improved. So improved baseball.
And the sport that got it all right though is hockey, because you get a penalty if you challenge something and you're wrong.
That's a good one.
Losing a timeout is not as bad, but a penalty is bad.
What would you do, though?
15 yards in football.
Oh.
15
yards, what do you do in baseball?
15 yards in baseball?
No, in baseball, what do you do? Strike, run? Well, you can't get a run.
I got to think about it.
What about basketball?
Oh, basketball?
Technical?
You just lose the ball. You know, whatever. Or technical. Yeah.
Two shots and the ball. Two shots in the ball.
If you're wrong. If you challenge and you're wrong, I mean, there should be a penalty for challenging and be wrong. What's next, Sol?
I agree. Let's see if what's next.
Is there anything left?
Comes next.
Because we got to move on. We got lots of stuff to do today.
Okay. So next is Indian man stages his own funeral just to see who shows up.
Love it.
I love this, but a lot could go wrong here.
Right.
Like, I could see wanting to do it just because you want to know who's going to be there when you're gone. But you're obviously not telling people at a stage because nobody would come. And then you piss everybody off who thinks that you're dead and you're not. So this would be something you would do.
No, because I don't really care to see.
Would you really, Tom?
I don't really care to see who shows up. But here's what I want to say. I have a solution for this.
A solution for which part? The staging your funeral?
To see who shows up at your funeral.
Okay, what do you do?
Two things.
Okay.
I think at some point when you get older, you can send out a save the date and see who responds. So
that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah, save the date.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, I'm not going to be here forever, but I really like you to come to my funeral because it means a lot to me. So I just want you to save a couple of dates in the future. That's a really nice thing to do.
That is a really
nice thing. Or you can save a spot. You don't save a date, you save a spot.
At the venue.
At the venue. Listen, I'm having my funeral, whenever it is, I'm having my funeral here. There's only 137 spots. Would you like me to save you a spot? You don't have to put down a deposit. You don't have to put down a deposit. Free parking.
Free parking. That works.
I mean, I love this idea. But now let's keep going. Let's see what's up next.
All right.
And by the way, you can call in any time. We know there's people on hold right now, but you can call in any time and we will get to you. We're going to have some fun with this, but we're going to keep moving.
All right, well, next up is Unleashed.
Let's do it.
This is one of our favorite segments. We're going to be talking, or Scott and Tom are going to be talking about how to teach fiscal responsibility when, as a country, we have lost control of our nation's debt. So how would you even begin to talk about this?
Well, first, let's say that every day we're going to do a segment called Unleashed.
Correct.
And every day we're going to tackle a different topic. And this topic today is just is fiscal responsibility. Tomorrow will be something else. Obviously, that's what this whole show is going to be about, different segments. And we're going to try to tie each topic back to you as an individual.
Okay? Right.
That's the important thing.
Right.
So it's fiscal responsibility for Scott Sheridan. Fiscal responsibility for Sol Espinosa. It's how to change a little bit about the way you think about it. And with debt out of control, as a nation, we kind of maybe have lost a little bit of sight of like how important, let's say, something like leverage is for an individual.
When you say lost sight of it, meaning people are taking too much or people aren't taking enough? Because there's a big difference between what an individual, what any of us can do, what any of the viewers could do, versus what the U.S. government can do. The U.S. government can, as we've seen, we're $38 trillion. The U.S. government can keep borrowing money basically at an unlimited pace so long as there are countries or people still willing to lend the money. Individuals can't do that.
Governments are different.
Different.
I don't think this is, I'm not going to debate a country,
whether it's right or wrong.
I'm not going to debate, debt limits, and I'm not going to debate, at this point today, I'm not going to debate taxes on corporations, taxes on the rich, taxes, and to lower debt limits or however they want to do it. I think this is about how do you teach fiscal responsibility when the general,
when mom and dad, not literally mom and dad, but when we as a country, being mom and dad, have none.
That's right.
Yeah, have none.
Yeah, because
so is there the takeaway? What does an individual do who's coming out, coming out of college, mid-20s, mid-30s, what do you do?
Well, the challenge, I think, is that it is incredibly difficult for anybody to succeed over certain expectations. Let's call it this way. Let's think of life as a giant distribution curve, because I love talking about trading this way. I love talking about business and everything else. If you think about life as a giant distribution curve, you don't want to be, you'd like to be above the 50% level, but you'd really like to be in the top, 14, 15, 16%. If success is measured, is measured by, let's call it money, material things.
Yeah. Which a lot of people would argue against that, but that's okay.
There's definitely, but the problem with arguing against that is you can't quantify the other side. That you can quantify success based on certain things that you've earned. It's very difficult to quantify success if it's just emotional success or moral success or.
Hey, but those are important to a lot of people.
Oh, of course they are.
Okay, but go ahead. So we're talking about financial.
About financial because that's really the only area that we can quantify and we can talk about. And I think if you want to be in that top end of the distribution curve, you have to learn how to use leverage to your advantage. And so I don't think you could be fiscally conservative. And I don't think you've got to where you are in life or I've got to where I am in life because we were fiscally conservative.
Okay, we are two massive risk takers. And I think to be to be an entrepreneur, you have to have a level of risk tolerance that's probably above most, right? Because you're willing to go out. The line that you always like to say is, as a trader, you eat what you kill.
Yeah.
Some of you start a business, you eat what you kill.
Yeah.
Most people don't have the internal, stamina or fortitude to be able to do that. They need to know that they have an income coming in. But if you take a step back and say, what is taking the right amount of leverage? At what point? Because it's different every point in your life. So coming out of high school,
Well, I don't know that coming out of high school, you're ready to, I don't know how important fiscal responsibility is coming out of high school.
Well, going to college.
Out of college, I think it's more, but I think if you're talking about, the first thing I would say about fiscal responsibility is I feel it is important for people to leverage the opportunity to go to certain universities to study certain things, and even if you have to borrow money to do that, it's super important. I would argue that's a very important step to your networking ability, to your future community, to your intellectual progress, to your maturation of everything about you.
And that is an old school approach, which I'm not saying still doesn't exist, but for sure, you see a lot of people not going to college. And you could say that they're paying the price for it. You're saying they're missing out because
I think they're paying the price for it.
They might, but the problem is that universities, the whole experience, not just tuition, but room and board and everything else, it's so expensive.
Crazy expensive.
That you're leaving, you know, the majority of the people coming out have debt that could take them 10, 15, 20 years to pay off. So if somebody sees that, that would be, I would think, a hurdle or a detriment, and somebody make a decision going, I don't want to come out with that. So how do you get somebody over that? How do you teach somebody to say, yes, that's a scary number, to say you're going to leave school in 4 years with a couple hundred thousand dollars in debt, which is a seemingly insurmountable number, but you're worth more.
Yeah, and I don't know that you have to, depending on the situation, I don't know that that means you have to go to a $80,000 a year school. Do you know what I'm saying? I think there are alternatives. But I do think that in that case, school is important. But I just think in general, learning how to take leverage, or learning how important leverage is, you know, nobody truly teaches leverage. I don't care what university program you're in. I don't care where you are. To really get a discussion on leverage, you almost have to go, you know, listen to somebody like us talk, or somebody like, you know, somebody who's out there, like just a crazy example, like a Tony Robbins or something like that. Somebody talking about how important leverage is.
Have you ever heard? Have you ever been to one of his events?
No. But I'm just saying, I couldn't think of another name. You know, Robert Kawasaki. I don't know who they are. I just know these. Very few people have that discussion about taking risk and leverage. And I can't tell you how important it is. Now, some people, you being one of them, the reason I say you is because your dad was a risk taker.
Huge.
Huge.
And the amazing thing is, I didn't realize it.
You never realized it, but it was in your blood.
Well, that for sure, but he said he would, and it's true, he would never bet more than a quarter. Never. He would never bet more than 25 cents on anything, except what I then realized later in life, he was all in at every stage of his life. All in.
And you saw the ups and downs.
Saw the ups and downs. Lived through them.
Which is why you are the least affected person by risk and leverage I've ever met in my entire life. On the other hand, my dad was an attorney and a labor lawyer. And he didn't take any risk, ever, other than take on a certain case. Or
how'd you learn it?
I don't know. So I'm just saying, we come from very different backgrounds.
Very different backgrounds.
You know, it's in your blood.
Yes.
I don't know about your, I don't know if that's part of.
My dad was a risk taker for sure.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Good. And then when you have, you know, parents that are risk takers, the kids are. Like, I feel like my kids.
Well, because it's not as scary if you're seeing somebody else do it.
Right.
Right?
But I also think it is, but I guess my point was, I don't know where you learn to take leverage. I don't know where you learn that. Because, again, they don't teach it. It's not something that comes very naturally. I think it comes to people, you know, we've been in the trading community for so long that I think it comes very natural. Leverage and risk-taking comes natural to traders. But I don't think it comes natural to anybody else. Or generally doesn't come natural. So I think, you know, just stressing the importance of basically putting more risk out there.
Calculated.
Well, you can only calculate so much.
Correct, but not going to Vegas and taking your entire bankroll and betting on black. Betting on yourself, taking risk by doing something, if you, again, using university as an example, absolutely.
I mean, I would look, because I think a lot of this show is talking about my own personal experiences, Scott's own personal experiences, and I would say that a lifetime of really, a lifetime of interesting investments and personal experiences and stuff like that, we have done really well betting on ourselves.
The best.
We've not done well. Not well necessarily betting on. I did a whole tour called the Bad Trader Tour where I talked about, you know, some investments that didn't quite work out.
They look good at the start.
Or you think, you know, sometimes you just think, oh, this is a shot I want to take. But in the end, taking risk, betting on ourselves, and also betting on other people and companies has actually paid off in spades. So it is, I just can't, the difference between person A and person B, if you are trying to measure success, a lot of times is just risk-taking.
Their ability to.
And leverage.
Correct.
And learning how
to. So some people may have the personality, almost from the get-go, to do it as little kids. People already are.
It's like a sales thing.
But other people, the ones who don't have it, they can learn it. It's basically what you're saying, right?
Oh, it's learned. It's learned for sure.
You can learn it.
It's learned if you have it. I don't know you can learn it if you are risk averse. And there are people who are risk averse. My boys, when they were little, I just remember we were on vacation, and I think they were 4 and 2, and Max, the 4-year-old, refused to like go jump in the pool. He would get in the pool, but he wouldn't jump in the pool. Levi would just run back and forth all day just jumping in the pool. Max is looking at it. Literally the last day, he runs, he jumps in the pool. He's like, oh my God, that was the most fun thing I've ever done. I can't believe that I didn't do that earlier. But again, he's less
of a... You're supposed to teach him by throwing him in.
I did that with Lila. She wouldn't go off the diving board, so I said I would do it with her. She was 4, whatever. And I said, okay, 1, 2, 3, go. And she jumped, and I didn't. She turned around. She gets up from the water. She's screaming at me. I said, yeah, but look, you're fine. You did it. And then that was it. But that's right. Take risks. Try it. The worst thing that can happen is it doesn't work, and you know not to do it again.
So when, as a country that we've lost control of our nation's debt, is it as crazy as this is going
to
sound? Is that actually the worst? It's really not the worst message.
Well, we don't know how it ends.
Because I understand.
But, we don't know how this ends. But, so we don't know yet because
let me pose it a different way.
Yeah.
Is teaching fiscal responsibility more important than teaching
risk? That's a good question. I'll have to think about that and get back to you. I would say learning how to take risk is way more important.
A thousand times more.
Not even a question.
Would you say?
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Not even a question. You need, because again, if you take risk and you, as you said, betting on ourselves, and that's what we've done, you can make a mistake and recover from it. But if you never take the risk, where are you?
One of the things we're doing now is we're building really cool software called Lost Dog. And someday I'll tell you the story of Lost Dog, that's the name. But we're taking a crap load of risk building the software because, you know, we don't know. It's going to work. It's not going to work. Whatever. So, what?
I said, look at the camera, maybe.
So it's coming. And look at cameras all over the place here.
I know.
Trying to figure out where the new cameras are. But anyway, we take a lot of risk, like Scott said before. And just building up Lost Dog again, and building this new show is a lot of risk. And we don't have to. Like there's nothing we could call it a career, but we don't want to.
We're in Fiji right now.
Yeah, we don't want to. So anyway, all right, we're gonna test out our first line. We're gonna go to Tano. Tano, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey Tano.
What's up, Tano?
Hey, I just wanted to call in on the first day and looking forward to Lost Dog and everything you're doing.
Appreciate it. You're going to go down in the books as being the first caller.
You're going to awesome. Love
it. You'll be a trivia question. Hopefully in 10 years when we're doing a show somewhere, we'll be a trivia question. Who was the first person to call in?
Tano, you're a risk taker. You're a risk taker. You just started your own business. So this is great. You know, this is right up your alley.
Yeah. Whatever little I know of it, I'm really looking forward to it. And just in case you guys were wondering, I'm not the guy that staged my funeral. I'm not that Indian. So.
No. You are too good for that. But, I got that. But yeah, it was a fun topic. It was a fun topic. Anyway, Tano, thanks for
the... I'm looking forward to the show. Yes, thank you.
Hey, thanks for the well wishes, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. See y'all. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yes, he's a very good friend.
That's nice.
Nice of him to call in from Atlanta, Georgia. Woodstock, Georgia.
Oh, nice.
A lot of Woodstocks.
And actually traveled to go get brisket with Tom.
Yes.
To Austin?
Yeah.
Yes. No, not with me, but same place. Yeah.
Oh, what a nice guy.
Yes.
Okay.
Anyway.
Finally.
So, you ready for a new topic?
I am trying to get there, but I am ready. This is part of the last one. But anyway.
So every day we are going to spend a few minutes talking about you know, just different topics. Some will be political, and some will be, you know, business related, whatever else it is. And for starters today, I kind of wanted to just go off on a rant on...
Well, we're going to call it Bad Dog.
Bad Dog is the segment.
Bad Dog.
So we go from Unleashed to Bad Dog. And the Bad Dog segment we're going to cover today, it's they're always going to be like two-minute rants, okay? And what?
Look at that bad dog.
Good picture.
That's a good-looking bad dog.
That is that. See, that dog is a really cool dog.
That's a cool dog.
It's a cool dog.
It's a bad dog.
And we are very excited about our we're excited about this segment because every day I get to write something. If you liked my old cherry bombs in the past and things like that, it's a little bit along those lines and
a little more edge.
A little more edgy. Sometimes I'll curse a little bit. I'll try not to. Sometimes I'll be a little, sometimes we'll cover topics that are not that comfortable for everybody. But anyway, we're excited about it, and let's see what we got. Today.
Wait, sorry. I was going to introduce it.
Okay, go ahead.
Today on Bad Dog, Tom has a bone to pick, one of his multiples. And today's is, what's the real cost of a presidential pardon?
Yeah, 60 Minutes did something on this the other day. They kind of stole my thunder because I was ready to...
But he just pardoned a whole bunch more, so...
Yeah, I saw that Rudy Giuliani last night and stuff.
Yep.
Do you know... Yeah, it's funny. I did a little research before going to the segment. The... they have a market on the cost of presidential pardons right now. I didn't realize this.
So, what do you mean the market? So, how much you have to pay to get one?
Yes, there's a huge... No, not to get a pardon. How much you have to pay to get in front of the president, in this case Trump,
yeah,
to at least have an opportunity to...
Okay, well, I'm sorry. There would never have been this except for our current president.
Well, there's been a lot of presidential pardons over the last, you know, 50 years.
I got it, Biden, I know, Obama, they've all pardoned people, yeah, but right at the end of their term.
But right now, there's actually a market in Washington.
How much is it?
For lobbyists to get their case in front. There's actually a two-sided market. Not two-sided, there's a one-sided market.
What is it? For X number? Hold on. For X number?
You can take a guess.
So this isn't guaranteeing you're getting a pardon. This is just what it is that somebody, a lobbyist, is going to say, I can get you in front of him.
I can try to get you in front of him, but this is what it'll cost you. This is per NBC, NBC and...
Well, my market, yeah, on the low end, it's $5 million. On the high end, it's $10 million. I'm going to say $7.5
million. $2.5 to $5
million. $2.5 to $5
million. That's it?
Okay. That's just to get you in front.
That doesn't mean you're getting it.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you get it.
It just means that...
Still, that's cheap.
Anyway, here's my little bit of a rant today. What is the real cost of a presidential pardon? So are presidential pardons for sale? Is this part of the new 2025 deficit reduction plan? This two-minute rant is a new daily segment called Bad Dog. You're going to love some. You're going to hate some. But I promise all of these will be fun. I'll try to make them fun. So I have a bone to pick with Trump's recent pardon of former Binance CEO CZ. As much as I love innovative companies, Binance, the world's largest crypto exchange, pleaded guilty to money laundering. CZ, its founder and CEO, also pleaded guilty to money laundering charges. Meanwhile, back at the White House, Trump's family crypto platform, World Liberty Financial, recently closed a $2 billion deal with Binance to host their stablecoin. It's just so everybody knows, to give a little context, it is very difficult to get crypto exchanges to host stablecoins and crypto coins and just digital assets unless you pay them a lot of money or make certain kinds of deals. Is this a conflict of interest? Well, it's a symphony of conflicts, all conducted by a man who once called crypto a scam and now has a $5 billion crypto or digital portfolio, which also happens to be more than all of his real estate holdings combined. But Trump says CZ didn't even commit a crime, somehow overlooking that he literally pleaded guilty to enabling money laundering, and mostly for terrorists. This man looked the other way as funds were deposited by people who want to kill us. It's crazy. And Trump is out there like, hey, he had a lot of support from some really good people. No, he didn't. Look, I'm a capitalist. I believe in markets, innovation, and disruption. But this isn't disruption. It's blockchain corruption. We are watching the unapologetic sale of presidential clemency in real time. Our founding fathers gave us the pardon power for mercy, not for monetization. And here's the unfortunate irony. While crypto can decentralize power and free us from corrupt institutions, this is nothing more than a plain old-fashioned money grab. Justice can't exactly be blind if justice is periodically checking its Binance account balance. The practice of pardons for personal enrichment must stop immediately. I'm Tom Sosnoff. Bada.
And if you happen to see the 60 Minutes interview, he said he has no idea who CZ is. He said never heard of him. I don't know who the guy is.
But he said that, he didn't know the insurrectionists were either. He doesn't know anybody is. He's a good mob boss.
Right.
From that standpoint.
Right. Never seen anybody. Never heard of anybody.
Nope.
Don't know anybody.
Nope.
Not sure what you're talking about.
I don't remember.
Didn't CZ give $100 million to his campaign?
Probably.
I think he did. I think he gave $100 million.
At this point, he gave a lot more than $100 million. It's probably.
Yes, he did.
Whatever it is. Anyway, every day we're going to do a little rant. We'll have a little fun. And I hope that you enjoy that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we have some different topics tomorrow.
I would like to throw out there something because we keep putting our phone number up.
The phone number.
But you can always email us. Obviously, now during the show, we're not responding.
That's true.
But emails are really simple. Scott@LostDog. Tom at Lost Dog, Sol, S-O-L, at Lost Dog, and we will answer all of our own emails.
That's right. We will.
All right.
So next segment is another of my favorite, and we're going to call it, wow, Words of Wisdom. And you guys are going to discuss and give us some insights into what it takes to self-differentiate oneself in the marketplace.
So this is a really important, whenever I think, wow, I think of Wendy O. Williams, don't ask me why.
And mine was V-Lander on Wheels. Remember Matt's V-Lander?
Yes, of course I do.
V-Lander on Wheels, Wendy O.
Williams. We had lunch with him and a private tennis lesson.
See?
Hold on, what is this?
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
You were busy, you didn't want to do it. Do you remember Matt's V-Lander? The tennis player, his great clay player. He came in, he's Swedish. He came in after Borg retired. And he won the French at like 17 years old. It's crazy. So he did this.
I don't really remember him.
Mats Wilander? I think he's won eight or nine majors.
Yeah. I've heard the name.
So he did this program with this guy, Cameron Lickle something. They would travel around and he would play in with you. He's good. He's really good.
You played with him?
Yes, twice. And he is a human backboard. Like he just sits there. You're not getting any ball past him.
I don't understand.
I got it for Andrew as a wedding present.
You were offered. You had no interest. Quote unquote, I have no interest because we did it once in Arizona. We did it here. Sol was there. That's proof.
Yep.
It was offered. You know who?
Bought it for your husband for a wedding gift?
Yes.
So he could volley with him?
Yes.
How was it?
It was amazing.
He played in. So it was eight men, eight women, and then he would rotate in. You know who's there? Joel Myers was there.
That's right.
He's a tennis player, right?
Hi, Joel.
I played a lot of tennis with him.
Yeah, he was there. See? Because I offered it up to people.
How come I didn't get the nod?
You got the nod, and as you always say...
Where was this?
Brimmer. And you would always say, I'm never doing it. And then we went to dinner at...
Yes.
Place burned down.
Greek
the
place?
Jewish place. The burned down.
Sorry.
The skirt steak. The one on Devon. The one
on
Devon. Lincolnwood, the one on Devon, it burned out, whatever. You know where we were. I'll think of the name of it. But anyway, we went to have dinner. It was great. You told some great stories.
Yes,
I did. Some I can't repeat here, but
I don't think I got the nod for
you.
This.
100% got
now
the
I'm
nod.
I'm upset because.
Well, if he's still doing
it. Maybe he'll come back.
If he's still doing it, I'll invite you to the next one.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. So, words of wisdom.
I know you were invited. You just were so busy. As usual.
I don't think I was even remotely busy. I was free that night.
It was the day.
Yes, I was free that day. Oh. All right. Well, let's move on.
Okay.
All right.
So, words of wisdom.
So words of wisdom.
So this is a daily segment that this is a daily segment that every day I'm going to pick a topic, or we're going to pick a topic that is something that has been kind of like game changing or life changing for us throughout the years. I mean, part of what this whole network's about is for Scott and myself to share with you what has made us successful, you know, through 35 or 40 years of business.
We're 38 years together. This could be a 30. We're 37. This will be our 38th next year. We started in 88.
Wow. So, the
very good.
The challenge. Very good. Yeah, yeah. The challenge for us is to share with you everything that we know, and everything that we've
done. That's a lot.
Which is a lot.
That's a lot.
But
a lot of it has absolutely no value, but that's okay.
That's okay. We have time.
We've built a handful of billion-dollar businesses, a couple of $100 million businesses, and I think it's really cool that somebody will actually share that. And that's what we're going to do. And so part of it, at least starting out, is the differentiation part, and for day one. And on as far as differentiation goes, this I also happened to do a college lecture on differentiation. And I think that it's probably the single most important thing we talk to young people about. I know how important leverage is, and I liked that topic for day one. But I think being able to differentiate yourself, and you know, there's some form of individualization.
Stand out from the crowd.
You have to.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't have to stand out from the crowd. You don't have to, it can't be forced. It has to be like
genuine.
Pretty normal.
Yeah.
And so we have a bunch of different, let's call it bullet points today to talk about.
Sure.
And one of them is dialogue. And what I found is, and this is through like hundreds of interviews, I don't interview as many people today as I used to, but I also negotiate a lot of stuff because we have a lot of partnerships and deals and things like that. And I find that what turns me on the most when you're talking to somebody is their ability to just have a normal dialogue. And what turns me off is when people try to force it, or they don't have the ability to talk to you like you're just sitting around shooting the shit type thing. And I think people that try to force it or impress you, it really works against you. And people that try to be, you know, a fun, a little self-deprecating, but also people that just try to, that just sound normal. Like, hey, this is a person I can have a beer with. This is a person I can have a cup of coffee with. This is a person I can be friends with.
And tell me though,
so
why does that matter? Because I'm assuming that when you were hiring, that you weren't looking for a friend.
I wasn't looking for a friend.
Right, so why, if somebody came in and has the technical skills for whatever the role that you're interviewing for, why, what else matters? Like, because I know for me what mattered, why else would that matter for you?
Sometimes there are certain technical skills that will outweigh. But generally speaking, if you want somebody, one of the most important things when you're building a business or when you own a business is you want people to stay for a long time. The most expensive thing to any business is turnover.
No question.
It's
horrible.
There's no way to make it back. You spend so much, you invest so much time and money.
A bad hire is worse than no hire.
A bad hire is worse than no hire.
And
sometimes a bad hire could be culturally bad, could be intellectually bad.
Yep.
You know, we've hired some brilliant people that just didn't work out because they were cancers in the clubhouse, so to speak.
Yep.
And so being able to have normal dialogue, to me, you know, just being a normal, I just don't want somebody that where everybody goes, man, he's smart or she's smart, but she's weird. You know, like that, there's a lot of value into making yourself, I'll make it easier, likable, okay? I think that if you're likable, you're hireable. And And if you're not likable, it is very difficult, A, to command respect, and B, to be a valuable part of the, you know, part of that ecosystem or that community.
Team, yeah. I agree. Great. That's very good. Next up.
So the ability to make a quick decision. And in an interview, you know, somebody might say, well, what is a quick decision? And for me, I have what I've been told is a very unusual interview style, because I typically wouldn't even look at a resume. I don't care. To me, it's more about let's have a conversation. And to your point, normal, let's have a conversation. And then I can figure out, does this person fit culturally? But the ability to make a decision to say, if you're asked a question, give an answer. Just whatever pops into your head, because that's probably the right answer anyway. It's definitely going to be the most truthful, but just give an answer. And if we're telling stories about decisions that we have made along the way, and a quick decision, it'd be interesting to hear what you would say. What was, from a business standpoint, what was the quickest decision, the biggest, not because we've made a lot of quick decisions, but the biggest, quickest decision for me was when we had the ability, I was trading on the floor, and we had just started Thinkorswim, and you called me and said, you got to get up here. And we had the ability to trade equity in Thinkorswim for a marketing deal. And we did it in like 15 minutes. And that to me was, like, I remember people were looking at us like, what did you just do? You just gave away a big piece of your company on a shot that you're not even putting any due diligence into, but we did it and it worked. What do you have? What would yours be to say, what's your biggest, quickest decision for business?
Okay, I got a bunch of good stories.
Yeah.
But first I want to just say that I think I've stressed making quick decisions as one of the cornerstones of everything we've ever done, one of the most important foundational pieces of anything we've ever done. And the idea of making quick decisions, just whenever you run into somebody that's super successful, and I always think about a couple of people I know that are like these crazy billionaires and just that have done, or just, you know, when you think about it, athletes that can make quick decisions, like the Michael Jordans of the world, the Tom Brady's of the world, these are the quickest decision makers. Like, that's why Brady could get rid of the ball in less than 2 seconds, because they make incredibly quick decisions. That's what separates athletes. What separates business people is their ability to make super quick decisions. And every time you run into somebody that is really successful, it's because they can make crazy fast decisions. I think we've always been the exact same way. We make a decision and then we think about it later. And then we usually don't regret it. There's definitely some decisions that we've made that we regretted. I once sold 2 exchanges for $250 million in a 7-minute phone call. With my first time, when we made a deal with crypto.com, this is, I don't remember the year, maybe 2022 or 2021 or 2022, something like that. We owned 2 exchanges, and I was on with the CEO of crypto.com, and he said, can you make a quick decision? And
yes, I
said,
I can.
Yes, I can. Can you make a quick decision? And he goes, you bet I can. And I said, okay. And here's exactly what I said. I go, well, it's like, because he was in Hong Kong. I go, it's 9:45 in the evening. Hopefully by 10 o'clock, 15 minutes from now, we have a deal. 6 or 7 minutes later, we had a deal. And we both honored it, and that was it.
And amazing thing from a trading perspective, there's nothing that you have that's more important than your word. And I'm not going to name a name here, but we had somebody recently who made a quick decision with us to do a deal with you, only to back out. And that was the end of that relationship, because we just don't tolerate.
Never will deal with them again.
Ever.
The craziest thing about that deal, and I'm not going to throw this firm and this guy under the bus, but the craziest thing about
that deal. It would be fun to do it, but.
It would be fun, but I'm not going to. But the craziest thing about that deal is as soon as I made the deal with this guy, and he's a billionaire. Okay,
multiple times over,
many, many tens of billions. As soon as I made the deal, I turned to my partner and buddy who worked with us, and I said, well, at least we don't have to worry about
this deal
falling apart.
That's exactly right, because he's a trader.
Yeah.
And as
this is a lock.
Lock.
I told our board
this
was a lock.
Yep.
Even though I had nothing in writing, I said, this is a lock.
Because when a trader gives you their word, that's their work.
But so. The most important thing that anybody can do, we used to do a segment 15 years ago on Tasty when we say, if you can order a hot dog, you can trade. If you can order a pizza, you can trade. I remember I had a Harvard professor on once, and I said, and she was giving me a whole lecture on something and on like brain waves and all this stuff. I go, can you order a piece of pizza really fast? And she goes, hey, what does that mean? Like, what kind of question is that? And that was the end of that interview. But yeah, I was like, you know, you got to be able to, like, boom, yeah. 2 seconds. And making quick decisions to me, even if you don't know the answer. So I'll give you another example. Years ago, we were interviewing for this role for a mathematician. And I would ask a question that I knew nobody knew. These are all kids that had 800 on their SATs. They all had 800s on their math SATs because that was the qualification to get the interview. Even though it wasn't totally legal, that was the qualification to interview.
I'd say.
Well, they wrote somewhere you can't ask somebody what your age is, but you're not supposed to ask them what your SAT score is, but there's no rule that says you can't ask what your SAT score is. So I had all kids that got 800 on their math SATs, which at the time was the highest you could get. I don't know what it is now.
It's still, I'm sure.
Okay, so I would ask a question, and I'm kind of like, had some fun with this. I would say, what is 17% of 42? Okay, that's it. Just looking, you can't, no calculator, nothing. Just give me an answer. What's 17%?
7.8, I don't know, something.
Okay, what's, I don't even know what exactly it is, but what's 17% of 42? Now, these are like, all these kids were like University of Chicago, Northwestern, Illinois, like all local schools here, and all like the smartest, obviously, the smartest kids, all math majors. Only one kid, okay, not only did he give the answer, gave the correct answer to two decimals, but only one kid gave an answer. And there was like seven, most people are like, I don't know, I don't want to embarrass myself. Like, it was just like, it was off the cuff. It was like, they didn't want to, you know, even though they could have figured it out easily with it.
Right.
They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to be wrong because they're trained not to be wrong. So one kid goes, I don't know, but here's, you know, and I forgot what he said. Let's see, it's four plus, it's like around 7 point something.
Yeah.
Right.
And 8.4 is 20, so it's.
He goes like 7.125. I think that's close enough. And I was like, you're hired. Like, you're hired. And he's still there to this day. And because he's the only one that gave a decision.
Yeah.
They gave an answer.
Right.
Make quick decisions. Single most important thing to me when I'm talking to people that I want to work with. Just, I want quick decision makers.
I got it.
Know your value. This is what Lost Dog is all about. Knowing your value. And we wrote up here, negotiate with confidence and from strength. And we are actually building technology, which we'll give you a sneak peek in a couple of minutes about knowing your own value. But we're going to be the first platform in the world that uses a combination of AI methodology, science, math, and combines everything together with some brilliant AI specialists, some coders, some developer, you know, an entire team of smart technologists to come up with a way to give you at least some confidence in that number, but you should also know your value just generally. Like, you shouldn't go into a discussion and say, I don't know. You know, like you go to order a piece of pizza, okay, whatever. This is different because I'm going to date myself. When I started eating pizza, it was 25 cents a slice. Now it's $7. But it's come a long way. The last couple of years has gone up ridiculous.
Yes, it has.
But you should know that if you're going to get a slice of pizza for $1 or $2, it's probably out of range. And if you're going to pay $8 or $9 for a slice of pizza, it's probably out of range. You know that somewhere in that $5 to $6 range is kind of the cost of that piece of pizza. You know the value of that. You know the value of a burger, a hot dog. You know the value, actually, even know the value of a home in most cases, even though that's pretty illiquid market. You kind of have a rough idea. A car. But a lot of people have no idea what their value is, and they'll go into an interview just hoping to get an offer. And not even, they're like, listen, I just want an offer. I don't even care. So firms, I wouldn't say they're necessarily, I mean, they're strong negotiators and they're in a position of strength and leverage and everything else, but it is important to negotiate whatever it is. It is important to have confidence in everything you do and to do things from strength.
Yes.
Just like it is with trading and investing, you never want to put yourself in a position where you're not going to do things from strength. Now let's pull up the next. So this is really interesting because I want to show you this. So this is your first sneak peek at what we call lost dog technology. This is what we are coming out with in a couple of weeks. Now this will be, you know, subscription based. This will be it's super cool. Young people, older people, anybody. It doesn't really matter. It's geared towards the $50,000 to $300,000 kind of price range, because when you get above a certain number, it's kind of hard to figure things out. But we're going to show you a bunch of sneak peeks here at this. And again, what this does is this talks about the first number on this page is actually what the industry, what we have looked at the entire industry in tens of millions of data points and come up based on your city, based on where you are, based on what the role is, based on the exact industry, all that kind of stuff, what an average salary would be. That's that first number up there, that $185,599. The next number is based on your education, your experience, where you live, and some of the what you're currently making, all this other stuff has your value. In this case, I just put myself up there just because we don't put anybody else in. But $185,000 was the industry average. $216,000 was what the technology has me worth. The next line over is what I should be making. In other words, that's my target. That's the context that I need, because I need to know what I'm striving for. I mean, I'm happy with the 216, but I need to know what I'm leaving on the table. And that $235,000 number is what I'm leaving on the table. And when I look at that last number, which is that $3.64 million number, that's what I'm leaving on the table over a lifetime of working. That's life-changing numbers that you're leaving on the table because you don't know really what your value is and what you should be making. All you would know without this kind of technology is that, hey, the $185,000 looks good. You don't know that you're really worth $216 at a minimum, and you should be
$235.
That's the two-sided market on you. The two-sided market is $185, $235. Now, for a lot of people, that market's going to be like $10,000 wide or $5,000 wide. But the two-sided market is $185, $235. The theoretical mid-price is $216. If you want to do this in break it down like a Black-Scholes model like we did here, and if you want to look at your lifetime value here, it's $3.64 million. That's what you're leaving on the table. And that's what's so cool about, you know, this technology. And that's what's so cool about what we're building. And in a couple of weeks, this will be available to everybody. And we're going to update this every 2 weeks for you. So you're always going to know in real time what your value is. Nobody's ever done anything like this before. And so you can obviously, if you haven't already done it, please go and sign up at lostdog.com and we'll let you know.
Join the wait list.
You just join the wait list. Just join the wait list at
lostdog.com.
Our technology is coming out in a couple of weeks. Our network, One Lucky Dog, always open, always free. Let's go to the next slide. And
okay.
I think there's one more slide coming. Okay. So, oops. All right. So we're going to keep moving this along, but I think there's one caller up there. I can't see who it is.
Yeah, I can't see either.
You got to move that to the middle.
Somebody from Pittsburgh.
Somebody from Pittsburgh, possibly? But I can't see. Can you move that to the middle, please?
Beautiful.
A TJ. Hey, TJ, what's going on, man?
I'm calling because I thought your earlier segments were really interesting about the leveraging yourself. I'm in the middle of an MBA program right now, and I'm actually taking a course called Intellectual Capital and Harnessing Your Star Power. And my current dilemma is, how do you take risks if you have no safety net, if you have no fall, if you are the fallback plan, and if you fail, it's all ashes. How do you hedge your bets on yourself?
So hopefully my analogy is that I talk about baseball, and I say, so long as you still only have two strikes on you, you're still in the batter's box. You don't ever want to do anything that puts you in the position where if it doesn't work, you're done. Now, nobody's ever done. You might feel like you're done, but you can always pick yourself up. Hopefully, you can pick yourself up and say, okay, I'm going to go try to do, I tried that, it didn't work, I'm going to go try to do something else. My guess is that it's probably not as severe as you're fearing that it is, and the fear of it, of it not working, is going to hold you back. So if you can figure out a way, obviously you need to eat and you need to have shelter. And, you know, I don't know how old you are, but obviously the younger you are, the more time you have to recover from these things. But my feeling is, if you're worried about it, that's typically a good sign that you should go ahead and trust yourself and go ahead and do it.
Hey, TJ, I love this call. And sorry for saying.
Thank you for calling.
Sorry for saying, hey, man. I did not know. But, you know, the thing you have to realize, and because you said something really important, you said, how do I hedge myself? And one of the things that we would tell you right off the bat is, don't think like that. Nobody hedges. If we come from the trading world. In the trading world, we hate the term hedging, because it's not, hedging's just kind of a cop-out more than anything else. I think what Scott said is the way you need to think about it. Forget about the hedge. Think about it as, hey, you're young, you're going to have lots of chances, and you're going to have to learn, and it's okay if it doesn't necessarily play out the first time or the second time. If we told you over the years how many doors have closed, how many people, I could list a who's who of every major, almost every major financial institution or private equity firm in America that's turned us down from giving us money over the years or investing in us. And it's literally a who's who of some of the biggest firms in the world who have said, you know what, you guys have no chance. And ultimately, every one of them regretted that decision. And so I think that, you know, you just, as long as you believe in yourself, just go for it. What you want to do is not do something that's probabilistically, you know, unfair to yourself. Like, you don't want to take a 1 in 10 shot. But if you think it's, you know, 65, 75%, that's your probabilistic outcome is going to be favorable, then you go for it. That's the way we think. As long as you have pot odds in your favor, you go for it.
And don't be afraid of monsters under the bed.
Yep.
Just if you think you can do it, trust yourself and get after it and just do it. And if it doesn't work, you'll figure out hopefully a way to modify. I hear you on the safety net issue, but trust yourself. And if you have confidence in your own abilities, and you clearly do, because you wouldn't be calling in and asking this question, give it a whirl.
TJ, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And good luck, and call back someday.
Yep.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so we're going to go, and we're going to wrap up today's amazing show.
Amazing.
First show. It was actually really good, first show. I'm a little surprised at how smooth it went. Went great. You know, it feels so good to be back.
Does feel good.
And talking. And Sol, you're good? You're hanging in there,
yeah,
first day?
Feels great.
Good. Good, good, good. So we are going to end the show every day. And like I said, it's somewhere between, you know, 75 and 90 minutes. We've been going so far about, you know, wrapped right around like 80 minutes, right? That's pretty good. So that's right where we are. Yeah. And we'll end every show talking a little bit about markets, because, okay, there's a very important reason for this. We believe our goal on Lost Dog and our goal on One Lucky Dog is to narrow the wealth gap. And it is not easy task. We want to do it in a way that's never been done before. We want to do it through education and through experience and through sharing know-how. In the past, people have tried to narrow the wealth gap through social safety nets, through legislating or mandating certain kind of, you know, minimums, whether they're minimum wage or equal opportunity. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with any of that, because I think all of that's necessary, but that's a Band-Aid, not a long-term fix. And the long-term fix is to, you don't want, you know, 3%, 1%, you know, of the people making all the money or having all the power. You want to distribute that. Maybe it should be 20%. Maybe that's a reasonable number to shoot for, because of that 80-20 rule, stuff like that. We're nowhere close to that today. It's like 99-1. So how do you get there? You get there through education, and you get there through teaching people that there's certain things you can do, like differentiating yourself, like understanding leverage, all that kind of stuff. But there's also another side to it, which is learning how important it is to have equity in yourself and the places that you work. And one of the things that we want to do on Lost Dog is to encourage people to participate in markets, whether it's like, there's no, I was talking to a buddy of mine who owns a very successful firm. And he said that we have a 401k matching program. And he said, here's the crazy thing. Guess what percentage of the people do not, of our employees, and they have over 1,000 employees, guess what percentage do not participate?
Too many.
Now, here's the thing. Yeah. Their matching program is like 3 or 4%, and they match it. So it's literally free money. So you put in $20,000, they give you $20,000. There's is riskless, okay? And he said to me, guess how many people don't participate?
35%.
No, it's less than that.
Okay.
It's about 17%.
Okay.
17% of the people do not take the free money.
The free money.
Because the thought is it's more important now versus right. having equity right. exposure, especially early in life, how critical it is, because that's where somebody can create wealth way greater than what you're going to create as from a salary.
We want to
we want that to change.
We want to encourage people that watch this network and that use our technology to, we want to narrow the wealth gap. We want to show you how overpaid executives are and how underpaid most employees are. And to change that, employees need to have an equity share in what they're working for, in addition to all the hard work they do.
Now, it's possible that the company doesn't have any type of...
It is possible.
That doesn't have a program like that, but then it's important to have equity exposure just in
general.
But
then you might want to have equity exposure in general, or you might want to go work for somebody else.
Or you might want to go work for somebody
else.
That's
why we're talking about markets.
And to be clear, this is not, because for those who have been with us for the last 25 years, this is not about trading. This is, we're not talking about trading. We're using the markets strictly as an asset class and something that... Unfortunately, most people feel when they're starting out, they don't have the money to do it or they don't have the know-how to do it, but how critical it is to put even a little bit of money away on a monthly basis, because that's going to really develop into something over time.
After building two of the best trading platforms in the world and after talking about trading nonstop for 25 years, we're going to do something a little different, which is what we've just done for the last, you know, 85 minutes. But we're also going to end the show talking about markets, because first of all, we're both junkies and it's a huge part of our life. And we want you to get excited about owning equity and or owning some kind of liquid assets that can help you build stuff, whether you have to invest your own money and put it into markets or digital assets or whatever it is, into something that's liquid. But our preference is that you make some money for the companies that you're working with. That's really our preference. But the importance of understanding how markets work, if everybody understood how markets work, 17% of the people at this one company would not be not taking their free money.
Correct.
And I'm sure that number is industry-wide. Probably higher.
Probably higher.
So on Friday, in the morning, the S&Ps were down significantly. They were down almost 80, almost 90 handles.
90 handles.
On Friday morning, because I was doing a live trading show and I was very, very familiar. Plus, I have some pretty big positions on right now. You know, I mean, I was definitely short on Friday.
Friday was a better day than today.
Friday was a lot better day than today. Today's a little painful for the good kids. But Scott and I have both been a little bit short here. But today the S&Ps are up about, they're up 60, 62. And the NASDAQ's up 370 after being down as we're doing the show. But they were down almost, the NASDAQ was down almost, the futures were down over 400, almost 500. But
on Friday.
On Friday.
Not today.
Friday. And today up 400. So they've had almost a 900 point reversal, which is, when you think about it.
Big. Big.
Well, it's a $25,000 index, right? The NASDAQ. So that's essentially a 4% move.
Yeah.
And the S&Ps from being, you know, down 90 to up, let's call it 70 today, 160 points, basically a 3% reversal.
Yep.
So the NASDAQ's had a 4% reversal in 2 days. The S&Ps have had a 3% reversal in 2 days. The Dow, very mixed. The Russell was actually strong on Friday, but still nothing like it. The small cap stocks haven't participated. The Dow stocks really haven't participated at all today, for the most part. And this is a NASDAQ rally, an S&P rally. It's like almost like, hey, one day the world's falling apart. And
next, everything's good.
Well, yeah, we hit a level that's like, oh my God, they're cheap. You must buy them. Since when did a 3% sell-off, whatever the sell-off
constitute a correction?
Constitute a correction.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, Bitcoin's up to 105
well,
and change.
It
traded just under 100,000.
Yeah, it traded just under.
So, I mean, that's a 5%. You know, that's a 5% move.
But that's okay because Bitcoin has a volatility that's almost three times the S&Ps. So you would expect that to be. And also, I don't know if the futures got under 100,000.
Right there, they were close.
They were close.
They were
I did look at it a little bit.
And gold has bounced back up. It's over 4,100 again after trading down, I think, 39 and change. Something.
Yeah, low 39s.
Low 39s.
I mean, we both traded gold from the short side for a while. It was a nasty little ride up. It was a good ride down. And it actually, in the end, worked out, but it wasn't worth the risk. I think in the S&Ps, you know, it was a nice ride down the last couple of days, last week, and then the rally back today has been not fun for the shorts. What do you think here? Well, let's talk about kind of the broad market, just, you know, in general, S&Ps, NASDAQ, and if you want to talk about any of the other commodity markets.
You know, it makes no sense to me that with what's going on in the world. There's a lot of things going on in the world that, from my perspective, are not positive. You know, that the market is moving the way that it is. But, you know, I don't think the market is in indication of the economy or the direction of where we are. I think the market right now is so top heavy with, you know, 10 stocks that as long as those 10 stocks are bid and AI is clearly the rage right now. How many cycles have we gone through? And I'm not saying that AI isn't going to be amazing and that we need the computer powering the chips, et cetera.
I mean, we are an AI company.
I understand it. I think AI is unbelievable. I think it's priced for perfection, and that's scary to me. I think if any one of these companies just stubs their toe, you're going to see a significant pullback.
I think we've gotten to the point where I agree with you, AI is priced to perfection, but also, some of the moves in some of these stocks, you know, AI is priced to perfection. A bunch of these individual stocks are priced to perfection.
Priced for perfection.
But I also think there's some very kind of scary things. Not geopolitical so much, because I kind of am of the belief now that the markets and the money flow out there is bigger than any psycho politician or anything like that. I don't think that's necessarily, you know, necessarily what's going to take the market down. But I do think there's some things that I think on Friday, the $1 trillion pay package for Musk, and I'm going to do a little bit of a rant on this later on coming up, but the $1 trillion pay package being approved by whatever it was, 70-75% of the shareholders, is a bet that I mean, would you have approved it?
Absolutely not. I'm not a shareholder. I never would have voted for it.
No, I'm not a shareholder either, and I wouldn't have voted for it either.
And I just think it sends such a horrific message.
Well, that's the thing.
The average employee makes $54,000 with no equity. I'm not saying there aren't people that work at Tesla that have equity, but this is the whole argument to say, You don't need CEOs making 680, 700, 1,000, whatever times the average person.
Which the Lost Dog software will show you too.
And I think that money, I'm not saying he's not brilliant, and he's not critical to the company, but your comment, which you love, is everybody's replaceable. I don't know who would replace him, but at some point.
Anybody.
Okay, but at some point you need to think about, this is not an I or a me, it's a we or an us. And the we or us, you've got to take care of the people that are actually doing all the stuff that Tesla is doing, right?
We have another caller.
I think that there is...
I agree 100%.
I think that there is a message in there. There's a statement in there. And I think it's, to me, I was looking for something like, I'm a trader, so I look for something like a sign. The ultimate capitulation, the ultimate, could we be, nobody needs $1 trillion is my point. I don't care what you do.
But then somebody can make the argument, nobody needs $1 billion, nobody needs $100 million, nobody needs $20 million.
I understand
that. So you can make an argument all the way down the line there.
I understand that. It's just a trillion gets to a point where it's hard to put context. I know we never thought somebody would get to a few hundred million dollars.
Billion.
A few hundred billion dollars.
Yeah.
It seems to me insane. When we started trading, a $1 billion company was huge.
Huge.
Now we have individuals worth hundreds of billions. But a $1 trillion pay package. You're not taking any risk.
Correct. I heard something which is interesting. If Bill Gates did not sell a share of his stock last summer, he would have crossed $1 trillion.
It's impossible. You can't do it.
If he had not sold.
No, I understand that. You can't do it.
No. I'm just saying he would have. But that's a founder of a company.
Right.
That's, and
but still, it's a.
That's not being voted. I'd be curious to hear if the employees could vote, what the vote would be.
I don't think he's well liked. All right. Quickly, we will take your opinion on the market right here. And then we'll go and wrap the show up with our last caller.
Well, the path of least resistance is clearly higher, but pot odds tell me we're going to be significantly lower in some period of time.
All I'm going to say is I hope yesterday, I'm not selling them today, but I hope yesterday, I'm sorry, not yesterday, Friday, wasn't the end of the sell-off. I don't think it was. I think this is a market where clearly the bias is to the upside.
Yeah.
I don't know how many bullets they have left to the upside, and I don't think you can buy them up here, but I'm going to wait till they run out of steam. I haven't gotten short yet today. I'm overall net short, but I haven't gotten short yet today. We're going to wrap up today's show, which has been amazing, and thank you so much for hanging in there with us, with Paul from Lake Forest. Hey, Paul, you're the final caller today.
Hi. Interested in your comment regarding salaries. You had posted $185,000 for the CEO of a.
That was just. That was just a made up number. But yes.
Okay. At Lake Forest High School, the teachers are being paid $185,000. Or if you look as far as the firefighters in Lake Forest, they're at $120,000. And then with a little overtime, they're up at $185,000. So what does it feel like to be the CEO knowing that you could just be a simple teacher at the high school or a firefighter that works some overtime to have the same wages as you?
Okay. So thanks, Paul. So just I should have said this. That was just an example that we put up there. That wasn't my true. Actually, Scott and I don't take a salary from Lost Dog. We're just doing this. We're not taking a penny. But and I just wanted to put an example up on the screen. But there are CEOs, and we are among that group that has over the years never wanted to be more than four or five times the lowest salaried employee that we've had, and we have stuck to that over the years. Now, as a CEO, most CEOs. If you're a founder CEO, you don't actually want to take a big salary because you're betting on the equity, not on the salary. Most hired gun CEOs, they don't have any equity, and they're only granted a small amount if they stay on for a while. So they want a much bigger salary. But here's the crazy thing, because that was probably a bad example. I should have shown you. The average CEO of an S&P 500 company in America, now I have to use S&P 500 companies because that information is all public, but the average CEO of an S&P 500 company makes $21 million a year and has a life expectancy as a CEO, or has an occupational expectancy of about 7 years. And so we are going to give you some insane numbers about how overpaid we think most of the CEOs are, but 7 years at $21 million, you know, you're talking about $150 million for 7 years, which is a lot different than that firefighter or that, you know, the teacher. I mean, I read an article last week where Walmart was paying, you know, some floor managers as much as $500,000 or $600,000 just because they were so valuable to the organization, to the operation, which I completely understand. So we have gotten to the point where people are starting to recognize how important loyalty is, how important smarts are, how important certain people are to the operation of their business and things like that. And we respect that. But I think what you're going to see, Paul, on the software that we built is it's not necessarily going to argue that you're missing something. It's just going to show you what you could be making given all your skill set. Some people, like in the examples you gave in Lake Forest, that's awesome. But there are other teachers that are like, you know, Chicago public school teachers that are also just out of, you know, teaching school that are making $55,000 and $62,000. So it is a very different, you know, it really just depends where you are, you know, how much seniority you have, things like that. So that market can be very, can vary greatly. Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Take care, man.
Thanks, Paul.
Take care, Paul. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
And that's our first show today.
And that's a wrap.
97 minutes, a little bit long, but we really appreciate you hanging in there with us. And we will post this. You can share it, watch it as much as you want. Please sign up on our wait list.
Take a bow.
You want to take a bow?
With you and you.
Bows?
We don't do bows. What are you, some crazy Latino?
Yes, I am.
Soul's taking a bow.
No,
thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.